My word. A panel game devised by Tony Shryan and Edward J. Mason. Dennis Pyle and Frank Muir challenge Anne Scott James and Dennis Norden in a game about words, with Jack Longland in the chair.
We go straight into round one, which tests their vocabulary. For 2 marks, what's the dictionary meaning of the following words? We begin with Dennis Norden. Dennis, a plethora, P-L-E-T-H-O-R-A, a plethora.
A plethora. I don't know. I have an idea. I came across a most useful and lovely word the other day, which is nimiety, which means too muchness. It's a very useful word because there's a lot of it about. And a plethora is about 80% of nimiety, I would say. In other words, it's a superabundance of choice without...
That's quite right, Dennis. It starts by a superabundance of one thing in particular. I don't know whether you happen to know that.
No, I don't happen to know that.
It's rather medical.
No, I happen to know nimiety. You know, I think that's as good a happening as you're going to get tonight.
It's a jolly good happening, but I wasn't asking that one. I think 1.5.
Is it blood? I can't remember.
Oh, yes.
Is it?
All right, now carry on, yes. I think you'll get your 2. It's primarily a pathological condition. It means you've got too much blood or an excess of red corpuscles in the blood. And hence, figuratively, as Dennis quite rightly says, it means any unhealthy excess or repletion in almost anything at all. 2 marks. Dennis Powell, a gravamen. G-R-A-V-A-M-E-N. Gravamen. Oh.
Gravamen.
Yes.
I think that means the weight of something or other.
Yes.
And possibly the weight of the argument.
Yes, I think that's good enough.
Jolly well good enough.
I was trying to trap you into a legal setting.
Oh, no.
It's a grievance expressed as a formal complaint or formal accusation, often in the courts, or it's that bit of an accusation which bears most heavily on the person accused of probably lots and lots of other things, some of which are not so important. In Latin, it meant inconvenience, and usually it is. 2 marks. Heck no. A cynosure. C-Y-N-O-S-U-R-E. Cynosure.
It's a...
Your partner is whispering.
Constellation of stars.
Yes.
Concerned with a dog.
Yes.
That's what you were whispering, dog, weren't you? Sino, with
dog.
All your Greek.
Yes, I'm saying dog.
Well, it really means the centre of attention.
Yes.
I suppose a kind of round-written quiz answer would be to say that James Boswell was a cynosure because he tried to be the centre of attention.
Yes.
And yet Dr. Johnson was Ursa Major.
Yes, that's good enough.
Oh.
And cynosure is Ursa Minor.
Can't fault that. Well done. Absolutely right, Frank was. But just to explain the bit he didn't explain, what we call the little bear, the Greeks, as a constellation, called the dog, and the bit at the end was called the dog's tail, and in the dog's tail is the pole star, which, of course, is the centre of all celestial navigation, and therefore it means something that is the centre of attraction. 2 marks. Anne Scott James, a maelstrom, M-A-E-L-S-T-R-O, and I think it's got some funny things over the O, and M, maelstrom.
Well, it makes me think of some kind of whirlwind affair with an epicenter.
Not wind.
Water. Water, sort of like a water spouty thing. It's like a spout of water which narrows towards the top, would you think?
No.
What would you think?
It's a whirlpool of water. Which has got, you know, like when the bath runs out. It's got a hole in the middle.
Ah.
Yeah. Do you know where it is?
Sounds awfully Scandinavian to me.
Yes.
Oh,
it was an Edgar Allan Poe story about it, wasn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, quite right. Yes. 2 marks, then. It's a dangerous whirlpool off the west coast of Norway, around the Lofoten Islands, And it's supposed to suck in and destroy ships which got too close to it, and therefore by association...
It's got a charybdis.
Yes.
Of the north.
That's right, it is a charybdis. That's quite right. It also means there's some perfectly frightfully overwhelming situation, metaphorically. Two more. Well, for those who like to guess ahead at the stories, Dennis, what's your quotation for later on in the programme?
It comes from Macbeth, and it's, "Screw your courage to the sticking place."
Fine.
It's a difficult one, isn't it?
And yours, Frank?
Mine comes from Berlin. And it's called "There's No Business Like Show Business."
We pass over that very rapidly and go on to round two. And this is a round of true confessions, personal revelations made or ascribed to well-known men and women of the 20th century. Two marks again. Dennis Norton, the ideas I stand for are not mine. I borrowed them from Socrates, I swiped them from Chesterfield, I stole them from Jesus, and I put them in a book.
That's a difficult one. It's got a vaguely... The word swiped,
yes,
sticks out like a sore thumb. It's got a kind of heartiness.
Yes. Dennis, he's preoccupied with obtaining friends.
And
influencing people.
And influencing people.
Oh, Dale Carnegie or Carnegie, is it?
That's right. It's the enemy. How to Win Friends and to Influence People by Dale Carnegie, I think he probably called it. I helped you rather a lot, so I'll give you 1.5. Now, Dillis Powell, I have proved by my life that I am more competent than the dwarfs, my predecessors, who brought this country to destruction.
Dwarfs, my predecessors?
Mm-hmm.
Not a bit out of Siegfried, anything like that. No.
Same country.
German.
Mm-hmm.
German, Bismarck.
Later.
Later than Bismarck. Hitler.
Yes.
Oh. Well done. Very good.
That's a speech by Hitler in Vienna, and I'm told it was made in 1938. Two marks to Lillis. Well done. Now, Frank, I seriously considered becoming a violinist. My violin accompanied me throughout my life and gave me indescribably beautiful hours.
There's a mumble from the audience.
In the war. They know.
Fawn ribbon drop. The spirit message is coming to me from row one.
I know.
Oh.
Too much of a message from row one. It's von Ribbentrop, written in Nuremberg jail in 1945 before he was killed. 1 out of 2, because you got some help from the front row.
Front row,
we'll give
I need
her the
now.
Other one.
Now, Anne Scott James, I'm one of the ruins that Cromwell knocked about a bit.
Oh, that's either Nellie Wallace or...
Yes.
what was the other one? Or Mary Lloyd. Mary Lloyd, I go for. It was a very good song.
Yes, and Dennis Lloyd.
You sing it.
One of the singers. No, it's Frank's. One of Frank's hits, not mine.
Well, I think you've got there. It's Mary Lloyd, and title of one of her songs, 2 marks. And we come to a round of origins and derivations, and 2 marks again. How did the following words or phrases originate, or how were they, or from what were they derived? Dennis Norton, a stevedore.
Stevedore.
D-O-R-E.
A chap who sort of packs things in the holds of ships.
Yes, that's the one.
How does it arrive? Is it the same sort of thing as matador?
No, you've really given the answer already.
Have I?
Don't expand. There's always
saying another word.
Don't expand.
You explain what I said.
You said somebody who stows cargo, and that's absolutely right.
Yeah.
But if you can put it into the language from which it derives, I'll give you a 2 mark.
Oh, I see. It's a foreign word meaning to stow cargo.
Quite right.
Stivadore is Italian for cargo stow.
Well, move a little south.
Or
Spanish.
Yes.
Spanish.
Stuff it in there, Luigi.
No, wait a minute. Anne's got it.
Spanish.
Spanish. No, Spanish would have an E in front of the...
Yes, it's not quite the word you quoted. It's not far wrong.
Moroccan?
Yeah.
What?
No, well, we used to have a little thing at school whereby you turned French words into Spanish words.
Yes.
Because... So somewhere you either change the V or you put E.
You put E.
Estevador.
Good.
Estevador.
Well, I think you're going to get your 2 mark, rather surprisingly.
No,
it's the And the Spanish word is estivador, a stirrer of cargo. But it also, there is an old English word, to steeve, which means to pack wool or cotton or other cargo very tightly together. So you take a choice. Dennis got there, 2 marks.
Hmm.
Tillispaw, to buy a pig in a poke.
What do I have to do with it? I'm sorry.
What's it derived?
What's it mean?
In what curious circumstances might you be buying a pig in a poke?
You have to translate it into Spanish.
Very the circumstances in which I buy pigs are rare, but I think it means that you buy something and you don't know what it's going to turn out to be.
Yes, and
so the pig is in a poke.
And a poke is?
A kind of bag.
Yes.
And you don't know what's coming out.
They used to try and sell suckers a cat instead of a sucking pig in this non-transparent bag or sack, they called a poke, so that when the sucker finally opened the bag, that was letting the cat out of the bag, and he didn't do too well. 2 marks. Frank Muir, a shambles.
Means a bloody mess.
Literally so, yes.
And always did.
Yes.
Shambles was the medieval, I think,
mm-hmm.
at least. It was a place where it was a street, usually, or a district, and York has one still, with a very good second-hand bookshop in it, where butchers operated and slaughtered and generally hacked up the meat, and the kennels, the gutters, ran with blood and bits of meat. And they were called the shambles.
Yep.
So the word has become to mean anything with lots of gore and all altogether rather nasty.
Or figuratively?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
Shambles. Shambles has come to mean, I think, one of those wartime manoeuvres which don't really quite work and come unstuck and everybody gets slaughtered.
Yes, that'll do. Yes, Frank's absolutely right. I think it goes right back to an obsolete old English word, shamble, which is a stool or a table on which you did, in fact, cut up meat. And then the district was called the shambles, which was the slaughterhouse or slaughterhouses, and from that to any kind of mess or disorder. 2 marks. And Scott James.
Denim.
Well, it's a kind of cotton.
Yes.
Of which teenagers and others' jeans are made.
Yes.
Useful, hard wearing, goes in the washer.
I know that.
American, I presume.
No, it isn't.
Oh,
well,
you can take over.
Wait a minute.
Dennis.
This is one of the. If you listen to enough panel games, you get.
You know the answer.
This is neem.
Yes.
It's de neem. It came from neem in France.
That's all right. I get 2 marks. Just to clear it up, without doubt. It's a twilled cotton fabric, a contraction of serge or serge, de neem. That is from the old Roman city in Provence, and that's where it originally came from. 2 marks. Well, now we come to the last round and to Dennis and Frank's quotations, and the marks will be awarded on the length of the applause from the audience here in the theatre. And Dennis, your quotation was, screw your courage to the sticking place.
perfectly well. I mean, just the ordinary errors that everyone makes, you know, giving hand signals with the French loaf in your hand. outside of that, you know, absolutely fine at driving. But for some reason, the moment she got into reverse gear, I've just never known anyone who drives like that. Now, I know what you'll be wondering. You'll be wondering, why didn't the Ministry of Transport examiner test her on reversing when she went in for a driving test? Well, the answer is that actually he did. But what happened was, I've got to put this rather discreetly, it turned out to be one of those situations where her examiner happened to be enjoying a rather warm ding-dong with the driving instructor's wife. Do you know what I mean? So that the more of the driving instructor's pupils he passed, the more business her driving instructor got. Therefore, the more often he was out of the house. And therefore, well, you know, I don't have to spell it out to people like you. But meanwhile, there was my garage wall being knocked down and put up again so frequently, the local bricklayer had his mail readdressed to Africa. But it finally got to the point where I was spending so much money on repairs, I went round to this former driving instructor to ask for some advice about my daughter. Well, when I rang the bell, it was his wife that opened the door, you know, the one I was telling you about. And I thought she looked a bit disheveled, actually. And she said, I'm sorry, but my husband's not in. I said, well, perhaps you can help me. And I explained the problem. Mind you, it took a bit of time because I kept hearing these little noises coming from inside the wardrobe. But eventually, the driving instructor's wife said, well, I tell you what the real danger is with your daughter. What can happen is, the more often your daughter finds herself going through that back wall of the garage, the more easily her total confidence in driving can be destroyed. And I said, yes, I do see that. And her confidence can be destroyed, to say nothing of the resale price of our property while it's going on. But what am I to do? And there and then, this lady produced a solution that was so breathtakingly ingenious and simple, I just seized her hand and wrung it in mute gratitude. Mind you, as things turned out, it was her neck I actually ought to have seized and wrung, but I'm anticipating my story, which may not be worth anticipating when we get there, never mind. What she actually proposed was this. Instead of having the rear wall of the garage repaired, leave it empty, leave the space there, but mount the whole garage on small, movable casters or wheels. Now, do you get the picture? What happened from then on was simply this. Instead of my daughter having to put the car in the garage, we put the garage on the car. You see, she simply pulled up in the drive and we rolled the whole garage forward over the car. Well, you're probably thinking, you know, problem solved. No more anguish and expense. Father reunited with daughter by swinging driver instructor's wife. Well, I happen to be one of those people who are just not fated to have their all's well, always ending well. Because you know what I hadn't taken into account, I really should have, was that our house stands at the top of a rather steep hill. That's how I came to be charged with an offence that the police themselves admitted is fairly rare in English law. Pushing a garage without due care and attention, exceeding the 30 miles an hour speed limit while in charge of a mobile garage. So for any fathers whose daughters do suffer these same reverses as mine did, I still think the principle behind the scheme is valid. All I would advocate is that when you do make your car shelter mobile, if you are on a hill, make certain there's somewhere to which you can affix the car shelter so that it won't shift. Or to put it in Lady Macbeth's words, glue your garage to a sticking place.
Well, all who watched our daughters learning to drive have been sympathetic with Dennis and that story. And we go on now to Frank, and if you remember, your quotation was, there's no business like show business, which I think comes from Irving Berlin.
There's no business like show business like no business. That's not part of the story. I'm just reminding you of the line. When I sat next to the Duchess at tea, it was just as I knew it would be. Her rumblings abdominal were something abominable, and everyone thought it was me. I should really apologise for quoting from the Oxford Book of English Verse at the beginning of this story, but it is cogent to my theme, because I want to tell you of an experience of mine which I think will bring hope to sufferers of abdominal rumblings. You know, which are not indigestion. It's a totally different thing. I sometimes have been subject to the odd twang of indigestion after a rushed pub lunch of a double Welsh rarebit and a strawberry milkshake about 3:15. It's as though just below the fourth shirt button there's some tiny person being careless with an electric soldering iron. And then I take a quick-relief bismuth tablet. And then, busy. Do you know the busies? They're marvellous. You chuck a busy in your mouth. And in 5 seconds, that little burning sensation disappears. But this rumbling's abdominal and abominable are something else indeed. I first came into contact with this particular affliction 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I can't understand it at all, because it isn't as though we've been having sort of tricky, difficult food. I mean, we've gone back to nature, we're trying to make ourselves self-sufficient from the garden, and we're eating things like Jerusalem artichoke soup. And that was, then we used a thing which I've concocted, which is baked bean butter. You get a tin of baked beans and you sort of mash it up in a pestle and mortar, and it makes a kind of butter. You know, you can spread that on your bread. And then we have sort of parsnip jam. And sometimes we finish off the meal with a raw cabbage and syrup flan. And suddenly I've had these curious sort of pains below the fourth button. Not this little midget with a soldering iron above the fourth button, but below. And these noises. Noises have been happening. And sort of ventriloquial they are, rather like when I sat next to the Duchess at the tea, you know, everybody thought it was me. There's something about tummy rumblings of ventriloquial. You know, the old original meaning of ventriloquist was somebody who produces noises from his tummy. And the funny thing is about when you sort of, I have to use a technical word here, but when you rumble, everybody thinks it's somebody else. And not only that, something else. So I went to the chemist and said, it doesn't work, my indigestion tablets, my quick relief, my busies, my bismuth. He said, it's below the fourth button. It's something quite different, these abdominal rumblings. He said, you can't have the quick-acting stuff. He said, it's got to disperse slowly upwards. And he said, due to our close contact with the common market, he said, we use now remedies which are used on the continent. He said, these tablets you'll find much better. He gave me this tin of things. I took, they were rather sweet, actually. They were rather like small bullets. And it said, insert one. And they're made by a foreign firm called Suppository. And apparently they work upwards in some curious way. They sort of permeate the things where it matters, where all these sort of colons and things, where all this stuff is chasing round and making this noise. But they really do work, and if you get the rumbles, which people worry about, go buy this stuff from this firm called Suppository. This really is the answer. In fact, as you know, Irving Berlin's made a song about it. He said, there's no bismuth like slow bismuth.
I think that's the most revolting story I've ever heard Frank tell. But by your vote, ladies and gentlemen, he wins the story, and he and Dilys Powell as a team also win this entire contest, and that brings us to an end of this edition of My Word.
Taking part in My Word were Anne Scott-James, Dilys Powell, Dennis Norton and Frank Muir. The chairman was Jack Longland. The questions were compiled by Peter Moore and the program was produced by Tony Shrine.
You've been listening to My Word from the BBC, heard each week at this time. This is the WFMT Fine Arts Network.